Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are after a couple of week hiatus, Wednesday, September 21st, a week and a day.
Yeah, you were in Brazil.
Brazil, yes.
You were there for all the fun when they had the surprise rate reduction and markets went crazy, and I'm sure everybody was celebrating.
It's a house of cards.
Really? Brazil is?
I think so.
Why?
Yeah, this whole BRIC thing is a scam.
Oh, well,
China's going to, you heard that thing I sent you, that did you listen to that guy moaning about China? They're basically the same shape as Greece.
I was in New York last week, and I went to the Bloomberg 50 conference, which is whatever the name is, and they had all these people on, and I thought you'd be interested. I sent you my notes, but Carson Block was there, the guy who took down Sinoforest.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a little time with him, and I spent some time with Stephen Roach, who was, I think he was the guy that... he may have been the guy that coined the BRIC term. And I spent some time with a variety of other people. Actually, the chairman of the Sovereign Rating Council for Standard & Poor's. I got some one-on-one time with him. And also Gary Gensler, which we'll talk about, from the CTS, the Commodities Future Trading Commission. But Stephen Roach, I was talking to him. I said, Steve, let me ask you something. I said, you cover China, you cover Asia. And this is the kind of guy that no matter what you say, he's always right. Even if you agree, he's somehow, you think you're wrong at what you said.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, I hear a lot of things about these phantom cities and, questions about the government's statistics. Oh, he says, no, China, you hear this, you hear that, you hear things on the street. I said, yeah, I hear about food inflation. He says, sure, there's food inflation. He goes on, but basically discounted everything that says that China is just dynamic and growing and amazing. I said, but where are they getting all the money from that seems to be flowing all over the place? I mean, it seems like the Chinese are the ones, and Japanese for a part of it, buying all the luxury items. And he gave me some answer, but I just thought it was pretty bizarre that you have such a divergence in opinion on China.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing the guy that you talked to right there was wrong.
Not according to him, of course. He's the head of Stephen Roach. He's the head of something for Morgan Stanley.
Yeah.
He's a big mucky muck.
Yeah, well, a lot of these guys are.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can take 10 mucky mucks and five of them will say one thing and five will say the other, so it doesn't really...
Right. And there was, who else was there? One of the Fed chiefs from Mexico was there, big fella, and talking how great Mexico was, and there was just, it just goes Whitney Tilson, the list goes on and on and on. I posted the notes on my website for the whole event. It was interesting. Carson Block was interesting. You know what he said? He had this incredible weight on his shoulders that he feels that he just hurt all these people with that note he put out on Sinoforest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That it was like this, he didn't realize the gravity of what was going to happen, which now they're halted, by the way.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, $1 billion of money just disappearing because of his uncovering this information, which, okay. And I asked about another thing that he did and that made the stock plunge, and then it came right back. Spreadtrum Communications, one that we have on our stock list.
Mm-hmm.
And he commented about it, but thought there was an inventory issue and not sure if he got it right, not sure if he got it wrong. But I will tell you, it seems to me that he'll come out with something about that again.
Hmm.
He didn't look to give up on that.
Well, you're long and it looks good.
Yeah. So what's happening? What else did you do in Brazil?
I went to a big conference. I didn't realize Brazil's finally got their act together and put together some conference halls that are other than the crummy one they had. They had one big one in Sao Paulo. It was just I think it was from the 50s or something. It was just a junker. And now they've built a couple of these new ones that are they're modern. And they have this big show called FutureCom or FutureCon, one of the two. And I think it's FutureCom. So anyway, it was actually quite interesting. There was a lot of everybody was there, every company, and they were showing a lot of stuff and had to give us a little talk.
What did you speak about?
Trends. I'm going to change my talk, I think, to the coming doom.
Oh, nice.
So and what you can do about it, because I'm sticking with my theory that we got the next, I don't know, 5-6 years, it's sell.
Yeah, it's looking kind of miserable these days, too.
Yeah, and they're selling opportunities. So I'm sticking with that for a while.
Right.
I saw this
right.
in the 70s. I went through it. It was the same thing.
So was the trip good, by the way? Was it successful? Was there anything that you came away with like, wow, that is just, that's dynamite?
Yeah, there was a couple of new food items that I had at the restaurants that were pretty good. And
I meant the conference.
Oh, the conference.
Yes.
No, not really.
Really? So the memorable part of this was the food.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's pretty nice. Standard.
Yeah. Did they pay for your food?
Yeah, I got paid to go and nice. Everything. You know.
Nice. Well, lots to talk about. You wrote a very, a hatchet job.
And yeah, you probably call it that. Yeah.
On Research in Motion, the maker of the BlackBerry, former CrackBerry phenomena that is now a, I don't know, what is it? It's a Betamax. I mean, what is it? It's something that's not even part of the landscape, it seems, anymore.
Just a phone.
Just a phone. If you have it, you love it because you don't want to not love it. And when you have it, all you do is really want the iPhone, but you don't want to give in yet.
Right, pretty much.
So do you think this is over, huh? This whole company is done?
Well, I think the whole phone business is going to shift to, so every phone will be a smartphone, and including the cheapest phones, because once they get the manufacturing capability of those screens set on high, the regular old-fashioned phones, like those RIM phones that have the little keyboards, will not be able to compete on price. And because all the phones essentially, I mean, right now the iPhone is just lucky that it can get as much money as it can for a phone that has no buttons, it has no moving parts, it's not really complicated to make, it's a software phone. And so you could change the software to make it all kinds of different things without really doing anything to the phone substructure. And so that leads me to believe that all phones will be smartphones eventually, and including the $19 burners and all the rest of them. And, you know, RIM is just not on this bandwagon. They're not thinking like this. They're still fighting the power that be. I think they're and I wrote a column in MarketWatch that kind of outlined some of the problems strategically that they have that they're obviously not going to get over. I'd be stunned.
I was relatively shocked that when the earnings came out and the estimates were low, nobody had any thought of them doing anything good. So you would think, okay, well, maybe the stock will, you know, tail down a little bit. I mean, they were 20-something percent on the earnings because their playbook sales were just awful.
Well, who's going to buy it?
I always thought that. I said, what is this all about? And these people are hanging their hat on the playbook sales? That's ridiculous. But it seems that nobody did buy it.
Well, the playbook was an automatic fail because it was attached essentially by law to the BlackBerry. So you couldn't get your email unless you had a BlackBerry. You couldn't do this unless you had a BlackBerry. You couldn't do that unless you had a BlackBerry. So you had to not buy the playbook. You had to buy the playbook with a BlackBerry to make it useful.
Stupid.
I mean, this was the dumbest thing imaginable. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking. Were they thinking that, oh, this playbook's so great that people are going to buy BlackBerry so they can use it?
Yeah, the whole thing, I agree with you, was...
It was dumb.
Lots happened in the tech space. I mean, we saw that there was an announcement today that Leo Apotheker...
Yeah, Leo Apotheker, is actually the way his name is pronounced.
Sorry, Leo. You know, Leo is going to be layoed off, it seems. Right?
Yeah, he's done.
And he's done. I mean, under his watchful eye, whether or not it was... Listen, if he was Obama, he'd be blaming everything, of course, on Heard.
Or Bush.
Oh, right. But you know, but he hasn't been outspoken as far. I mean, in the beginning he was. He hasn't really said anything to, you know, rally the troops. Their earnings have been relatively awful. Their plan is non-existent. The idea of splitting off the PCs business is the only thing they've had. Now they're thinking about getting rid of him and bringing in possibly temporary or on a permanent basis the former name behind eBay, Meg Whitman, and the stock rallied 7%. Boy, you got to. I don't know. How would you feel if you were that guy and they say there's rumors that you're going to be taken out and a stock goes up 7% in a horrible tape?
Yeah. Yeah, you feel like a dummy. You know, but you know, the people that really should be fired is not these CEOs that they've been going through, but the board. The board is incompetent. And to even suggest Meg Whitman, I mean, please.
Well, she's available. She didn't win the election.
She's available. It doesn't mean she can run HP. You need, like, hardware people, you know, to run HP. You need somebody who's got an understanding of the computer business, not that website business. It's not even the same.
That is a bad fit.
It's a totally bad fit. It's almost ludicrous.
Yeah, you got to wonder about that. Now, that's a good point that you mentioned. There's a whole different level of understanding about hardware services, business services. I mean, eBay didn't have any of that.
No, it's just it's a website that did well.
Yeah. But, well, let's put it this way. That's even worse that the stock went up 7%.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So, in other words, they're going to put in the hands of someone who doesn't have experience the company, and the stock still goes up 7%, which means that no matter what she does, can't be any worse.
Right. Mm. This is the same as the woman over at Yahoo, who they finally let go.
Did we ever get to the bottom of that story, why it was such a bitter goodbye? And
no, she's such a profane woman, and she's just, you know, not civil, I think. And I mean, the fact that she got a big check in the mail for leaving, but that was another bad fit. I mean, she's a woman that comes from a software company that sold to professionals, mm-hmm. Autodesk, to a website that relies on advertising to make money and social networking and the rest of it. I mean, talk about do they just think, do these boards actually think that a CEO per se, just based on definition of CEO, that they can run any sort of company with no experience in that genre? I mean, where does that come from? It's idiotic.
Well, if you're a podiatrist, you can clearly do surgery on an eye. You're a doctor.
I wouldn't want a podiatrist working on my eyeball.
It's the same thing. I mean, it's because you're a doctor, you're qualified to do all things that all physicians can. No, it is ridiculous. And that was I agree with you. It was a very bad fit. But I mean, we've had these situations before. But I agree. I mean, you can't just lay on this horrible situation to anybody. Where a company's failing and then expect them just to, you know, prop it up. And we've seen that time and time again with other companies that it just doesn't work.
It never works.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things we can talk about. We could talk about things like, there's so many things about government. Oracle and Adobe, we could kind of finish off the tech here. Oracle and Adobe announced tonight and they beat estimates, which estimates have been coming down across the board. But Oracle surprisingly had a nice beat, and they said a lot of their business was coming from Europe, which was kind of interesting. Mm. And it looks like there's some level of tech spending that's still out there. And you question whether or not the technology world is a safe haven at this point. I mean, Apple has been breaking through, hit an all-time high yesterday, and it kind of ever since maybe it was the confusion and the cloud overhang of when Steve Jobs would leave that held the stock back a little bit.
Mm.
But now that he's not there, stock has been doing great.
Yeah, it's a selling opportunity.
And then Al Gore's on the board, right, of Apple?
I don't know. Maybe. I think so, yeah. He might be.
He seemed to have opened his mouth today about the October date for the iPhone 5.
Oh, I'm sure Steve would likes that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So he made a boo-boo. But that was good news, and they're going to sell in China, blah-de-blah-blah. But anyway, so technology, lots of wild things happening there.
There was some talk on the Fast Money show about how tech has been sucking up a lot of investment because people are scrambling to figure out what to do with their money, and they think tech is safe.
I think the big thing about tech is there's a wad of cash on the books. Look at Microsoft, Apple, you know, and you can go down the list of companies that have clean balance sheets, little or no debt outstanding, so you don't have that debt burden if things go awry, and you have plenty of cash to weather whatever storm you need to weather. And especially that's why there's probably maybe only a select amount of deals being done and no major, major acquisitions that aren't instantly accretive and that are debt-based.
Well, they do have a lot of money in the bank, these companies, at least a couple of them. But that money can start disappearing real fast with some bad decisions.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think everybody's waiting for tax law, for health care. I was actually up there. I don't know who was talking about that and when they were talking about that. I was up at with the Fast Money Gang. They invited me on the show next time I was in. And I was there last Thursday, I guess, after the show with Joe and Guy and who else was there? Anthony Scarabucci. So we spent some time together. And actually, I think Guy's going to be on my show this weekend, the Disciplined Investor.
You're going to be on the show as one of the guys in a box, though. You're not going to be at the desk.
Nah, I don't think I'll be at the desk, but
that'd be nice. I'll probably you'd be good on that show.
Yeah, I'll stand there and they'll give me 30 seconds. If I happen to be in town, I'll do it. I'm not running up there to do it.
Yeah.
So, but I will tell you one thing: the Bloomberg offices in New York. I spent part of the day up there last Wednesday because I was doing some work to some. They were customizing some application for me, and wow, that is a beautiful office. I mean, gorgeous.
Really? Better than the... Because the office... Because I've been to the Fox Business and I've been to CNBC. And
now,
CNBC is actually pretty nice. You didn't like CNBC?
Now, it's fine, but it's a studio. It's very nice. It's, you know... This is glass walls everywhere on the... I don't know what floor it was, overlooking Manhattan. And, I mean, a gigantic kitchen snack area and fish tanks all over the place and just, you know, gigantic TVs, you know, everywhere. Newsrooms were just... buzzing. Very cool.
Hmm.
Very cool place. Okay, so let's talk about some of the things in government for a moment. Okay, the Department of Justice Inspector General has found something. They are finding that the various agency and government conferences were serving $16 muffins and $7 servings of beef Wellington as appetizers.
Yeah, a little piece of beef and also $8 and something coffees. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, this is a government at work.
Yeah, they're going to come down on it, so I don't know what they're going to do.
What are they going to do? How about doing less of these stupid conferences? These are just meetings in the field that are unnecessary because there's too many workers and there's really nothing to do in the office, so they can't fire anybody.
I'm impressed with the $16 muffin.
I got a kick out of that.
That's pretty substantial. But today the House rejected a bill that included a $3.5 billion aid to victims of the Hurricane Irene. Hmm. And other natural disasters. And the problem is, people look at that, oh, okay, all right, trying to save money. The problem is that attached to that bill was additional money to continue funding the government through November 18th. And without that approval, there's a quote-unquote shutdown at the end of September, which is 10 days away.
Seems to be happening every other week. There's another shutdown threat.
I don't know about you. I would welcome a shutdown of the government for a little while.
Government shut down twice during the Clinton administration and nothing came of it.
I mean, you know, really, just if just they could take a break for a little while, maybe we can get this economy back on track. I mean, I told you about that mutual fund that only invests. They invest in the markets when Congress is out of session. And when Congress is in session, they pull the money into cash. How beautiful is that?
It's funny.
I mean, there's got to be something to that. But they just make a mess. I mean, it's a constant battle. Now we're going to have, obviously, this November date that's coming up with the deadline for the special committee to come up with these cuts, or they're automatically going to be enacted. And now we have President Obama. Did you see his speech or look at the text of the, at least the framework of the jobs bill?
I heard the speech. Oh, the jobs bill is a joke.
I don't get it. I mean, because I take money from my right pocket and put it in my left pocket, that was I'm richer.
That and the fact that it's really retread legislation from some time ago. I mean, this is nothing new in this jobs bill. He just basically put in a new bottle.
And the words "pass this bill now."
Pass this bill now. And right. When he was saying that, the bill wasn't even done. I mean, there was nothing to pass. They don't have that. In fact, right. As far as I know, as of today, which is the 21st, the bill still hasn't been submitted. So how can you pass it? Pass it
not
now.
Not only that. If you look at the fact that they're barking out all sorts of numbers, that it's going to save this many jobs and do this, they're talking about a million jobs. And the price tag on this thing is about $450 billion. That's $450,000 per job.
Well,
that's a little absurd.
Yeah, why don't they just give a million people that? Why don't you just have a giant lottery?
Just give 8 million people $50,000 apiece. You know, how far do you think that would go?
I think that would go a lot further than what they're going to do.
Right. Just every single Oprah show, give $100,000 under everybody's seat every single show for the whole season. Well, that'd probably not be enough either. I mean, it's just the whole thing is ridiculous. The amount of money that we're talking about here and the lack of constraint and inability for them to find a way to do it more efficiently. I told you this last time. I said he's going to talk about shovel ready or infrastructure, education, and what was the other thing? Oh, and green energy. I mean, I don't know if you and I talked about this Solyndra thing. What a disaster.
Yeah, pretty embarrassing.
It's very
embarrassing. And now these guys are going to testify, but they're going to take the fifth.
Now, what is that about?
I don't know. You tell me.
Why would they take the – I was totally confused. Here, let's just fill everybody in here.
We didn't do anything wrong, but we're taking the fifth.
Right. So the Solyndra deal is that there was a big push, obviously, back in – I think it was 2009 for green energy and money to be spent on green energy for this – you know, to create jobs and, you know, we have to change our ways and off of oil, et cetera. And so part of that was that government would give out money to various firms. Well, one of them was this company called Solyndra out in California. And they were a solar panel maker. Okay, so far so good. So I guess they gave them a few $100 million, and I guess they blew through that pretty quickly. And then there was another guaranteed loan, and the whole deal totaled like $500 million. But in the end, the loan on the back end that was given came in front of investors. So investors got pushed to the side where the government came in. And it seems that the Office of Management, OMB, Office of Management Budget, or it was maybe another division, was looking at the deal before they gave the money. And the White House was pressing to get this deal done because they wanted some kind of photo op with Biden. And they wanted to say this thing is being done. And they kept on saying, no, we don't know if we have done the appropriate due diligence. There's some things we're finding here that we don't like. Now, long story short, miraculously, in a very short amount of time, the money was given to this company, which then within months went bankrupt. The whole $500 million is gone. 1,100 jobs are gone. And everybody's wondering what happened and how they go through so much money so fast and how they get approval on this when they shouldn't have. So that's kind of the story.
Yeah, well, then now you know where they're taking the fifth. I mean, somebody walked away with some money here because it's no. How do you blow through that much money unless you're just paying old bills? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. Now, there is some finding that one of the or the person who founded this firm is a major contributor to the Obama campaign.
Yeah. Yeah, they got that part.
So that's kind of a little fishy right there. And the question was, why did they push for this thing without doing the due diligence? Which is the same thing as the jobs bill of just barking out all these different things that it's going to do and creating some kind of hope with the reality and knowledge that the Republicans are going to balk at this and they're not going to allow some of this crap to happen. And they already stated that they're not going to have any new taxes, and now they're coming up with this Buffett plan to tax people over $1 million some, you know, ridiculous amount of money.
I don't know why they just don't have get it over with and have a wealth tax. Find everyone who's got more than $10 million of net worth and take half their money. That would straighten things out, wouldn't it? I wonder how many of those guys who voted for Obama might change their mind next time.
But why should it be just the wealthy? I don't, you know, here's the problem.
Because it makes the public feel great.
Oh, okay. So it's a Robin Hood mentality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, I've thought about this for a while, and it's yeah, this is, oh, you know, it's so unfair. We've tried to be fair. Everybody gets taxed equally. I personally, by the way, I'm a flat tax guy. But that's never going to happen. And because of this need to, like, gouge, you know, or have people that make a lot of money pay more than their share because it just makes everybody feel better. And the fact of the matter is the wealthy themselves take credit for being smarter than the rest of everyone else. And the way I see it at this point, using that perspective, hey, you can take all their money away. They'll just rack it right back up again. They're so damn talented. So it shouldn't really make any difference to them because what difference does it make to a genius? And but the public is at the point because of the fact that the company's offshore. I mean, they won't blame who's really responsible, which is the government and all the regulations and all the tax breaks for people sending stuff overseas and all the sweet deals that go on in Washington with large corporations. But it looks as though the companies send all their business overseas. They set up shop over there, make a bunch of money, keep the money offshore. live it up, take money on from the TARP and spend it on bonuses. I mean, at some point, you know, no matter what you think is fair, the public just goes, what's going on? We're getting just – the money's being stolen from us. And they get sick of it. And at some point, a populist comes along and says, just line them up and either shoot them or take half their wealth and spread it around. And that's what's happening right now. And I don't think there's any way you're going to get around it. And you can argue till you're blue in the face, but the public – and if Obama actually had his act together, he would go right into that direction. But he's a little frightened of the idea.
Well, because he wants to be elected again, and he's much – it appears that right now he's much more involved in – and concerned about his election and getting –
That's what the guy does. He runs for office.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But just to get back to that for a second, the idea that if I live in a community and we all live in a community and some people make more money and less money and maybe I have more kids or less kids and I pay the school the same amount of money that my next door neighbor pays who doesn't maybe have any kids, is that fair?
No, it's not. But at the same time, the problem that you have in Florida is that all these retirees go down there and then they gut the education system because there's no it actually is fair if you want to consider the fact that putting money into the education coffers lowers the crime rate. It makes communities safer. It has a lot of other benefits besides the fact that your kid got an education. Mm-hmm. And that sort of thing seems to be lost on the public.
And what about this whole protectionism that is starting to really bubble up very considerably right now? Whereas in the bill, this Obama's, there is a portion of that that says that the money that goes to certain companies to build, let's say, infrastructure is all going to be American manufacturers. And, you know, that's just a very strange situation that you start opening up because now the other countries are going to say, well, you're going to do that. We're going to do this.
Yeah, well, that's always the problem you have is this retribution when it comes to trade deals. But when you have a bunch of Chinese companies that are essentially taking advantage of the system and they're cheating, something has to be done about it. So I'm in Brazil and I had this – I was at dinner with some guy who worked for Huawei and the Chinese router company. And who says this is the worst company in the world to work for. And I was discussing with him something somebody else told me, somebody from KPMG, KMPG,
yeah,
the big consulting firm. And apparently what's going on is, for example, to compete with Ericsson for big switches and some of those big accounts, Huawei, which is I think it's H-U-A-W-E-I, is pronounced Huawei, they just let the Ericsson sales guys go in there, do all the due – whatever they do, they fill out the forms. They do the due diligence. They put the bid proposal in and they go through a lot of work. The sales guys from the Chinese company come in right afterwards and say whatever the bid was from Ericsson, we'll do it for 30% less no matter what. That's
nice.
That's their whole model. And
they're profitable?
Well, yeah, they're killing everybody because they're essentially – you know, these Chinese companies have a kind of a de facto government subsidy in some levels. They steal a lot of IP. I don't know that these guys specifically do, but the Chinese companies often do. And they take advantage of the situation, and they're competitive in a very unfair way. And so now all of a sudden you start to get this protectionist stuff that starts to happen for good reason. I mean, what are you going to do? What else can you do? I mean, these guys aren't playing... You know, they're not playing the game properly, and it's too much work, or I guess. You could put these suits through the WTO and try to stop it. But, you know, meanwhile, companies are buying. They don't have time to wait for a settlement from the WTO, the World Trade Organization, to stop this practice. This sort of thing is a problem.
Well, the same thing is also happening in a different manner, in a more of a broad-based manner, with countries managing / manipulating the currencies, right? The same thing, because they can create a much better environment for their products. Because you know, you say, well, the Chinese go in and they say 30% less. Well, how about the same products and services that may be 15% less because the U.S. has devalued and debased their currency over the last year or so, and now our products are so much cheaper than, let's say, Japan's for the same product.
I don't think that we've actually the Chinese have peg their money to ours, even though they let it slide a little bit. And they've made a practice of doing that. But the fact of the matter is their products are underpriced considering the actual value, the true value. And I don't think that we've overtly tried to sink our own currency.
I disagree.
Well,
I totally disagree. You could see the benefits.
I know the benefits. The benefits are great. But when you're dealing with most of our stuff coming, you know, we do still make a lot of stuff. We make Boeing planes and rockets and destructive bombs and things for people. I don't know that people are buying cars, you know, Chryslers.
I mean, I bought two bombs last week.
I know. I saw one of them. It was one of the stock picks you had.
Yeah, exactly. Ha ha. Boom.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Ah, yeah. Stinking Dunkin'. Listen, I went to buy a car last week. So I walk into this place, and it was a lease deal. And went through the little process, and he gives me a price, $433 a month, which is the base price of this deal and whatever. I said, really? I said, I do a calculation, and I'm coming up with like $310 it should be. Well, he said, how do you figure that out? I said, well, here's this and this and the residual value. And it turns out his residual value was better than the one I was using anyway, so I gave him the benefit of the doubt. And I said to him, are you kidding me? Where's this extra $100 and change coming in a month? Long story short, went to another dealer, same deal, $300 a month. And you wonder why these companies have such bad reputations.
Well, this
same car.
What car?
It was a Hyundai Genesis Coupe for my son.
Okay, which is a nice little car.
And he's buying it. It's his money. He's
And the difference was somebody wanted $400 a month lease for that thing.
Yep.
For a Korean car.
I was shocked.
Maybe they didn't want to sell it.
I don't. I have no idea. I told him. I took the piece of paper. And I wrote the number one on top of it. He goes, what's that? I said, go tell your manager that's the number of chances he's got to bring the car down to the price I believe it should be, or else I'm not buying it. Because I'm going to just go to a leasing agent. I'll go to another dealer. And somebody's going to sell it to me for this price. That's the price it should be.
Right. You know how to do the calculation.
And it's very easy. It's a national sales program. And he said, we can't do it. We walked into the other place without even negotiating. It came right with the right price to us.
Sounds like they get $10 cheaper than your price, actually.
Yeah, and it worked out very well. So he ended up getting that nice little car. You know, drives great.
Yeah, those Hyundais are really they're kind of the trendy car to get right now.
And the new one, not the Genesis.
Now,
the new
you get
one,
like a 100,000-mile warranty. It's unbelievable.
Yep, exactly. The new one has a reclining seat in the back with a massager. it's like a Lazy Boy in the back seat. I'm not kidding. And fully automatic. It's like $78,000 for it. It's gorgeous.
Hmm.
Anyway, so Moody's working overtime these days. Moody's downgrading the Bank of America today and Wells Fargo at the same time. Within just minutes of each other, the stocks just got crushed. And then all of a sudden, a couple minutes later, Citigroup also. Citigroup wasn't downgraded in the same manner. They were downgraded on the short-term debt, not the long-term. They maintained it. Bank of America went down two notches. Wells Fargo went down. They got just smoked. And then on top of that, you saw all the banks start to sell off today. The Fed had an announcement today of their whatever action it would be, and highly expected was this twisting program.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. What is it's twist and shout?
Yeah, twist and shout, right. Twist and shout. That so back in 1961, there was a program that was done, and it wasn't originally called twist, but then I guess the Chubby Checker song came out very soon after. And it became popularized, and they called it twisting program.
The twist was Chubby Checker, and let's twist again. Right. But twist and shout, I think.
No, because at the time it was twist. This is twist and shout. I'll get to that, and I'll tell you what that is in a second. Right. So it was twist originally. It was called some other kind of thing, like lump or I don't know what it was called. It was something else.
Lump would have been good.
Yeah, it was some other kind of name. And then what they tried to do was just this experimental thing where they bought bonds back then and tried to – basically say, okay, well, we're going to buy bonds on the longer end of the currency, on the longer end of the maturity. So bonds go from, let's say, you know, 1 year to 30 years, treasuries. And the longer the treasuries are, those are usually the ones that are related to mortgage interest rates, maybe personal consumer rates and things of that nature. So what has happened with the original 600 or 1.2 trillion, whatever you're counting it these days, that was the quantitative easing was the Fed went in and started buying the short end of the curve. Now, if you think of a curve, on a normalized curve, it goes from the bottom left to the top right, slopes very nicely. Normal.
Right.
Okay. Now, a steep curve, right? So you have a very high long end and a very low short end, which we'd call a steep curve. It's usually good for the banks because the banks can lend out money at a high rate and they can keep money, like in CDs and things like that, and pay out at a small rate. Good margins for them for that, right? You have something called an inverted curve, which doesn't happen very often, but that was like in the 80s when you could buy a one-month CD. It was like 18%. But a five-year CD was like 12%.
Like borderline going out of broke tomorrow.
Right. And so what happened was that we had a steep yield curve for a while. It was very beneficial for the banks. And even though they didn't tell you that was their intention, that was clearly the intention of the Fed to make the profitability of banks as good as possible to get them out of their hole. Well, they did this and they kept the yield curve steep to normalize for a while. And now they have to figure out what to do with all these reinvestments that they're going to do. Because all the money, they don't want the money being paid back at this point because the government doesn't have the money to pay it back. And they want to keep on buying it to keep interest rates down. Well, even the talk of this a month or so ago pushed down long interest rates dramatically. Just talk about it. And that's what we call the shout. Any kind of talking, and they call it communications. And what you and I call it is rhetoric from the Fed. You know, just saying, hey, we'll do something in the future and put a carrot out there. They're calling that the shout. That's a tool they use. It really is. It's a tool they use called communication, which is to say things could happen to try to shape the economy or the markets. And so what they did was they went out and they came out with an announcement today that they're going to do this twisting program where they're going to actually start taking the money that matures off the short end and start reinvesting it in the longer end. And there was assumptions of how much would be done originally. It was only $400 billion over a longer period of time than anticipated. And on top of that, the big issue was that in the actual minutes and the statement, and every word, every single word is picked apart. I mean, every single word, okay? And the word significant downside risks, so the word significant downside risks to the economy are present, was in this statement, much different than others. And everybody knows how carefully the Fed chooses their words because it could really rock things.
Yeah.
So those words combined with the other things that have been discussed are sent a shockwave in the market saying, oh my God, are we on the verge of a recession here?
Selling opportunity.
And it was a selling opportunity big time. And then because they went out further on the yield curve, it flattened the yield curve more than was anticipated.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
Okay, so therefore the banks lose profitability, which you have to scratch your head and wonder why they're doing that. So I wrote about this yesterday before this happened and said I think that I actually came up with something for the acronym TWIST, which is the wrong interest strategy theory. Absolutely a bad idea because historically in the 60s it pushed the dollar higher. It actually created less profitability for the banks. And in the end, there wasn't a lot that it did for the economy. And I said, my advice to the Fed is don't just do something, stand there. They shouldn't be doing anything at this point because by doing something, it's passing the wrong signal.
Yeah.
Banks got obliterated today. Goldman's under 100, like 96. Bank of America fell back to like $6.50 or so. The banking sector was the worst. It was down 5% today, banks overall.
So what do you think the theory is, the real one, not the wrong interest strategy theory? What are they trying to accomplish?
Well, I think that outwardly they're saying that they are doing this to keep interest rates down so that mortgages can be done better.
Nobody's doing any mortgages. They're not loaning money.
Right. I actually looked at yesterday the trends of willingness of banks to lend, which is high. The loan standards, which have come down, the problem is there's no demand.
I'm not buying that.
All right. I looked at all the stats.
Yeah, you can look at everything you want, but I talk to people. Maybe the demand is down because people are out of work. I mean, that could be. But all I know is that I like to refinance a couple of properties, and nobody's interested.
All right. Well, I mean, that could be a part two. I mean, the bottom line is, though, that there is lack of demand and maybe lack of interest in lending. How's that? Okay. So there's something that's not working right there. I also said that by doing this is going to actually create a deflationary environment because people are not going to want to buy and do something because they're going to wait for rates to come down. The long bond came down almost 2.5% today. gigantic move on the long bond. Gigantic. Under, I believe it was under 4% today. 3.99.
That is big, I believe, for a bond.
It was for a 30-year bond, ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the 2-year bond is negative.
It is?
Yep. In other words, you get
Seems
money.
Like a waste of money.
Actually, 30-year bond is 3%. Excuse me, 2.99.
Yeah.
Now, so you ask me, what do I think is the real reason? Well, who benefits from this? Well, the first one that benefits is by bringing down the yield and bringing up the prices, okay, bring up the demand, it inflates the value of the bond. Now, 2% or 2.5% on bonds, or let's just say, let's call it, I don't know, 1.5% today on average, okay, across the board. Who holds a lot of bonds, I'm thinking? Well, the Fed is holding a buttload of bonds on their books. So they just inflated the value of their bonds dramatically. So they're going to profit from this whole deal. Mm. Of buying all these bonds in the U.S. So isn't that be great? How would you like to have total control of the value of your portfolio?
That'd be great.
How cool would that be?
Yeah.
The second one is gigantic holder is China. China's all sorts of pissed with us. But we need them to keep lending to us. And if we keep on degrading our dollar, that's going to be a problem for them because any money they make is going to be moved down. So they not only got – China didn't get a big – not only got a big boost to their bond holdings, but they got a 1% increase in their dollar today. 1% the dollar went up today on this. And the third person, the third party that would really do well on this is the issuer of the bond because now they have a much lower rate to issue at. So the government now gets a great deal because they're issuing bonds at a super low rate. Therefore, the interest payment and loan service and debt service on this is much lower, creating a better budget. So there you go. That's
yeah,
your
this
benefits.
Is a. It sounds like a three-card Monty.
Yeah, it's an inside job.
Yeah,
total inside job. So you know, some people made the commentary that it's good for the banks. It could be because banks did buy a lot into this. They bought a ton, like $90 billion worth of this into this. So they got a nice little step up on it. And they're also going to do some work with mortgages. So the banks are going to benefit a bit, but they're going to get hurt on the other side. So we actually – I picked up for our clients in our trading accounts an option, a put option yesterday on the financial sector. And it was up 80% today.
The option you bought?
Nice.
Wow. That is a good
one.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah, that makes up for a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
All right. Well, that's it's interesting. So I was there's a couple of stories here on the list that we should at least mention before we go look at our portfolio. The Chinese appear, and I've heard this story before. The Chinese are trying to get people to smoke.
Seriously, isn't that unbelievable? Now, don't forget, I think there's only one real. Well, I think there's only one maker. There's one distributor of.
That's the government.
The government creates cigarettes.
Yeah, and they got these slogans like, genius comes from hard work. Tobacco helps you become talented.
Yeah. Nice, right? So this is happening in the schools. They're being taught that it seems the whole thing is so bizarre.
It's
but
totally
I guess
bizarre. And I think a lot of the Chinese, especially the businessmen, they don't realize at this point, at least amongst the Westerners, that you don't really want to be a smoker. It's very inconvenient. For one thing, you're addicted to it. And then if you show up in San Francisco, there's no place for you to smoke, and you're just annoying everyone.
Well, the other question is it a grand plan for population control, or is it a really bad plan for healthcare costs?
Well, it's definitely a bad plan for healthcare costs because it's going to cost them money down the road taking care of all these lung cancer people. But I just found this to be peculiar.
Yeah, the teaching, I mean, it's back to the same thing. You know, the question of how would you like to be in charge of the valuation of your portfolio? Well, how would you like to be in charge of teaching people to smoke if you're the smoking company, if you're the tobacco company? Same thing. It's government. They're out of control. They're out of control.
Well, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. So the EU ministers met last weekend to talk about this whole Greek debacle, you know, and Italy and all this. They met over the weekend. And lo and behold, we saw that Timothy Geithner, our Treasury Secretary, decided to go over there. I don't think in history we've really had representation in those meetings. It's their meetings. They do what they got to do. Well, he went over there, and I guess he started talking about these ideas that he had and how you could do. And they said, excuse me, you're here to listen. And basically said, and by the way, we're really not interested in your ideas. Your country is one of the main places that started this whole disaster, and you're being reckless with your money now. We should be taking your ideas? Are you kidding us? And that kind of clamped down.
Well,
that
Well, there's definitely a dichotomy between the two essential theories of how to deal with an economic situation like we have. One of them is austerity, and the other one is to spend into it. And we're the spend into it side of the argument, and the Europeans, generally speaking, at least the old school Europeans, the Germany, for example, they're totally 100% in on the austerity aspect of the fix, and I think Geithner probably irked them.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is neither of them are working. The big spending is creating other problems. I mean,
neither of them do work, but they are right. Two theories that they're attacking.
I mean, the idea that you can do, like what Greece is doing, they're increasing the property taxes dramatically on people and then doubling it very soon after and firing hundreds of thousands of workers and all, to say that, hey, we're fixing our budget deficit. You think, wait a second. Well, where's the money going to come from to pay this off? Are you just doing this on paper so you can get... See, Greece is brilliant because they know they got everybody else by the cojones. You don't want a Greek default because the French banks are a disaster. You have then a domino effect with Italy and then Spain, and the whole thing is just a major disaster. So Greece knows that basically what they're going to do is put things down on paper and promise, and then get $80, $90 billion of money to float them by for some more time. Meanwhile, they're rioting in the streets. Nobody's, you know, very encouraged about the situation there. They're wondering if they're going to have a job. They don't want to pay taxes. It's a disaster. Nouriel Roubini says that Greece is going to default and should be probably excused from the, you know, from the EU.
Well, that, what kind of an EU is this?
No, it's not good. So, you know, that's happening. And then, the problem is that on top of it, you have a lot of communication or rhetoric coming out of Europe, and Trichet every once in a while popping his head in saying this or that. And they don't have a plan, really, it seems, over there to really get this thing under control. And the question, and now, finally, after all this, I guess we were just happy to put our hands over our eyes and ears. They're coming up. A lot of people, you know what? Those stress tests that you did were BS. We all knew it at the time, and I guess everybody hoped it would just come out good in the end, but now we realize, or now everybody realizes, or they're being told, those stress tests were just totally a joke. So
I don't know. I'm finding the whole thing highly amusing.
It's ridiculously amusing, and it's spooky.
Yeah, well, it's amusing and dangerous, of course, because you really don't want world economic collapse. But it's a possibility.
At the same time, John. At the same time, you know, these countries going to get the realization that you can't run things like this?
You know, as far as I'm concerned, as long as there's $16 muffins, something's wrong. Yeah. $16 muffin, and this is our country. They were the, you know, spendthrifts. It's unbelievable. So I'm looking at the you have a SP 500 chart here with the so-called bear flag pattern.
Yeah. Yeah, let's take a look.
Why don't you
at that.
Explain to me what this is, because this is something I'm not familiar with at all.
Okay. There's a variety of different technical patterns that you could look at. And one of them that we're looking at here, for example, is called a bear flag. So you have this, think about a flag, you know, on a flagpole.
Yeah. Looks like a
flag. On a flagpole.
Yeah.
And what happens is that you have this significant vertical drop down. You have to have that, okay? And then you have a point where it drops to. Then you have this slow rise, you know, between a range. So you have a higher lows and a higher high. And that can progress for a while. So you get this kind of upside down flag, or maybe even a hockey stick looking thing.
Yeah.
Okay, that moves. Now, if the pattern plays out, again, this is the theory, like head and shoulders, or, you know, take any of the various patterns that you want to look at, pennants and So if this pattern plays out, what happens is that naturally people try to get in on the bottom, but there's a certain point where they just sell it again, and then it bounces and it bounces and it bounces. If it breaks the support of the lower trend line of the lower lows, then what happens is the calculation of the range down from that point is the equivalent of the prior drop. So you see, we duplicated the pole of the flag and put it on the end from where the top could be and down to the next level. So again, it depends on the slant of the trend.
On this chart, unfortunately, people will probably have to look at it on the website, but on this chart, we have a red dotted line that looks as that it's a moving average of some sort, but what is it?
Oh, the red dotted line that's sloping down is a 50-day moving average.
Okay, what's the blue one?
200-day moving average.
Okay.
So you had also another pattern here called a death cross. That happened in, late July. There's a golden cross and a death cross. The golden cross is when the 50-day average crosses above the 200-day average, saying that there is a shorter-term trend that is moving much higher than the longer-term trend. Right?
Right.
And vice versa.
So there's the death cross.
The death cross is when the 50-day crosses below the 200-day, and now...
Does it have to make a distinctive cross like it has done?
Yeah, it has to be below, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it could be like a couple of points and then kind of bouncing around.
That's okay, but now, I mean, we are clearly below.
Okay, yeah.
And more so, we're trending down dramatically.
Right.
You know, now the slope is trending down.
So now these blue vertical lines on the far right, which is the flagpole going the other way.
Right, that's the calculation or the target calculation, which is the equivalent size
of the
other pole, right, exactly. And you take that, and there's a couple ways to do this, but you take that from the top of the trend line. The question is, where does that trend line end? Okay, you can look at that at a couple different places.
Right.
But technically, it's at the top of the trend of where the last point was when it crossed below the lower trend line of the flag.
Right. Now, for this particular chart, based on this theory, this says that the S&P 500 will blow down to 1,010 or so.
Yeah, call 1,000 just to round it up.
Down there.
So that's if this pattern does play out.
Now, what would trigger when does it trigger? I mean, is there a triggering mechanism, or could this flag get really big or long, like a pennant?
That's a good question. A pennant would come to more of a pointed end, and that can't happen with this pattern because that's not the pattern, right? You know, you'd have to have the lower highs and higher lows.
Right.
So what triggers this is, okay, when is it going to happen? Is it close below the lower trend line?
So if it closes below, what is it closing at now?
Well, let me just give you, it just did, kind of. Correct. It did, definitely.
Yeah, 1166.
Yeah, depends on how you exactly draw this, but this is a pretty good representation of what I believe is a, you know, again, everybody can draw this differently, but I tried to be liberal with this and not get too antsy. So it really didn't close below here. It went below, but it didn't close below here at any time during this pattern since late July. So now you have a break of trend. That's not a good thing.
Hmm.
And you have this pattern here, and you have its what is also called a continuation pattern. So what happened was we had this downtrend. We had a consolidation that people were trying to, you know, get in on the lows and all that. But now what happens is all the people that kind of got in down here in the 1150 area, 1125, on the, you know, if you were lucky enough to get on the lows, which is hard, you probably waited till it came up a little bit to get some confidence,
yeah,
to see some support. Now all of a sudden you get into these people saying, you know what, if it breaks below here, I'm out of this. I'm done. And that's where you get that blowdown in the next level.
Hmm.
The other thing that's important to recognize is that the volume during the consolidation has to be lower than the averages in a low volume environment and lower than, of course, where the blowdown came in. So look at the volume below. You can see that it kind of saucered out on the bottom there.
Mm. Yeah.
Volume.
Interesting.
So... I mean, will this come true or not? I don't know. You know, it's possible, but this is a very – I mean, I sent this to a technical guy that I know pretty well. He says, absolutely, that is no question that it's a bear flag.
You had confirmation of the bear flag.
No, the other point is that it really, there's a time period. Some people say it may be, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. Some people say it can be as long as 8 or 9 weeks. I mean, this is kind of the extent of where that flag is right now. Because it really started when? It started, where the flag started developing would be about the first week of August. Right? The drop happened, then it started bouncing. So we're now at the tail end of when that flag break happens. And so we'll see what happens here. But, you know, with all the things going on, with the Fed pretty much out of ammunition, with the problems around the world, I mean, things are ripe for this to break down here.
Hmm. That's a good one. Okay.
I'll put that on the site.
It falls into, sounds right.
One other thing I want to mention to you, maybe we could pick it up next week, this whole full tilt poker thing. Have you been following this?
Not too closely. I do know that these guys are busted for – I mean, I don't believe that – I don't see how people can trust online poker, because it's been – a couple of years ago there was a scandal over somebody who had cracked some sort of algorithm, right, and they were just beating the crap out of everybody.
Right, but these guys seemingly took these guys who, again, put it into the perspective of the famous guys from the poker circuit, you know, whatever that means. But, you know, Howard Lederer and this other guy, I don't know who he was. He had a black hat and long hair. And all these guys that were on the circuit, they start this full tilt poker. They're all wearing the hats. They're all promoting it. All the different players promote it. They took, like, I don't know, $100 million. And supposedly just when they had no more money, just started using fake credits for people to play and wouldn't let people take out their money.
Hmm.
So it was a Ponzi scheme they're being cited with.
Well, how did they not... How does that work? Doesn't poker, you just take a piece of the action? You're not gambling if you're the house?
Right, but the house, what they did was these guys had all this money and they took these big dividends or, I don't know.
So they paid themselves money more than they had.
Yep.
And so then they try to make up for it by Ponzi-ing it back. Oh, nice. Right. Nice. Okay, so let's see what we got here. Oh, look at that.
Let me mention something on here. There's a particular one that sticks out here I'll mention. And as a matter of fact, I got some emails on this from people talking about things like the words. Let's see. The word clairvoyant came up. Genius came up. The next Warren Buffett. There was a variety of different things that came up, which was nice. Nice to hear, because they were talking about your Netflix short.
Yeah, right at the top.
Only man in the world, the only man in the world that made money shorting Netflix.
At the top.
Lives to tell the story, by the way.
Yeah, well, now it just keeps going. It's the gift that keeps on giving. So,
you know, what's really fascinating about this is that, you know, it seems a little overdone, by the way. But okay, it is what it is. And it's almost like the shorts are getting revenge at this point. You know, all the people that got crushed over the time are just getting their revenge here. And what usually happens is that the CEO, Reed Hastings, would come out and start talking about things and that. But now he's talking about splitting the company up.
Yeah, crazy. Making it worse.
And in a way, I find it really ironic that this stock lasted as long as it did with the change of technology, because basically what's happening to them is what they did to others.
Right, exactly.
You know, they put Blockbuster out of business and, you know, the whole DVD industry and all that. And then the streaming comes along. They're, by the way, I've always said this, way behind in quality streaming titles, which I find unbelievable.
Yeah, everybody, that's all people complain about. I talked a little bit about the Netflix collapse on today's X3 show, x3show.mevio.com for anyone keeping track. And everybody there says that they just can't stand these. There's nothing. The streams are all just junk.
Junk. And even the new releases are like, wait a minute. Has this refreshed in a year? It doesn't even look like it's new.
Yeah.
Like Gone with the Wind was a new release recently.
Gone with the Wind.
I'm like, what are you talking about? And I don't understand why they can't. There's obviously some reason, but they can't get newer movies to stream. I don't get it.
Hmm.
So Apple and Amazon and, you know, pick your poison, what name it is obviously is eating their lunch. They never had the bricks and mortar like Netflix had.
Yeah, no, it's doomed. So,
50% gain. Nice job, John. Do you want to? I think you should. You're gonna just let this ride. Are you gonna?
Oh yeah.
You gonna reverse this? No.
No.
No. No reversing.
I said let it kill itself, and then. But I think it's got. I'm targeting 60.
Wow.
Anyway, it might it might take a dead cow bounce or whatever they call those things where they just bounce.
Well, it would be a cat. It would be a cat, but in this case, it would definitely be a cow.
Yeah, cow, dead cow. Yeah. Boing might go up a, 20%, but that's just a selling opportunity.
Yeah. Like everything else in the world. The other thing is
everything on this list is a selling opportunity.
Everything's for sale.
We have only one. Actually, everything we have on this is short, and there's only one short that's not paying off. And one buy. We have one buy and three, but the two of those buys are short funds. I mean, so it's right. Really a short, even though it says buy on here. Everything is up except Apple, which is going to probably kill me. But, I made the mistake with Netflix. If you remember, I shorted it once a couple months earlier and learned my lesson, and that's why I think I picked up the timing on when to do it. I think this is going to happen to me again with Apple.
Well, it's okay. You know what? That's a good lesson, by the way. Seriously, it's a good investing lesson because there are times you buy a stock, and let's say you buy it at $10, and it goes down to, I'm just picking a number, 9, and you're out of it, and then it goes to 9.50, and you're not going to get into it, and then next thing you know, you turn around, 4 months later, it's at 30.
Yeah.
And people have a very big reluctance to go back into something. Just because your timing was off for 100 different reasons doesn't mean that it's not a good stock. Go back into it if it's moving. The stock doesn't have any memory about when you invested, and don't let your pride get in the way. It may be another time to get into it in the future.
Or out, as the case may be in this market. Right. So the other short that's not paying off is the Dunkin' Donuts, which is hanging in there.
Which is interesting because there has been so many articles written about the – I didn't say this. They said it. The holes in the Dunkin' Donuts financial theory.
Yeah.
JCPenney's doing great. When I was at that conference, a lot of people loved the whole JCPenney story, the whole turnaround story with the Apple guy that left and all that. And I must tell you, obviously, we're seeing it not so good.
Of course.
Not such a good turnaround story at this point.
Well, I mean, the guy shows up and everybody just assumes some magic's going to happen. Now, we don't know that he can do anything. He's not was he ever a CEO before? I don't know. Not of a company like JCPenney's.
Well, this
it's another one of those situations.
About,
right, exactly. Which is what I was thinking. Will you bring in, Meg Whitman? Why don't you give her the CEO job at JCPenney? Right. That actually makes more sense than HP.
It's just like a chef. If you run an Italian restaurant and you're a chef, doesn't mean you can go over a Chinese place and start cooking.
Right, or you can't be the CEO of McDonald's.
Right. So what else we have? Spreadsheet Communications doing amazingly well.
Yeah,
much better than I anticipated. And as a matter of fact, I don't know what's going on with it, I must tell you, because we sold it. Probably at about 20-ish, and we didn't buy it back. It's at 21. Even on a really bad tape, it was only down 3%. I got to tell you something. That was unbelievable. And even on down days, it's been up. It's almost like, I'm not trying to spread a rumor, and we don't own it at this point. It's almost like there's something underneath the system. Something's going on.
Somebody's going to buy them. This is a buyout situation. It looks like a buyout.
It's possible. Yep.
I'd look into it, but it seems to me that... I'll look into it. It might be a good call-in for MarketWatch if there's a potential for a buyout here because something's holding it up.
Yeah. And this is the one that Carson Block from Muddy Waters came out.
Right.
And the stock dropped like 30%.
And then bounced right back.
Right back. Like nothing ever. And not only back, like way up.
Right. Which means it was unusual in this market. So, I mean, when something like that happens, something's up.
Yeah. So it's been moving well. Your European exposure... We actually own that for clients as well. It's up 7% today. It's a double short on Europe, and you get the benefit of the euro. You get a double whammy here. You get the benefit or the problem with the euro moving because it's dollar based, and you get the euro benefit if it moves down, and you also get the European exposure on the short basis and your ETF on the EEV, which is the emerging markets, very well, up 20%. Aflac up.
By the way, I feel a lot better about that having visited Brazil.
Yeah,
and by the way, it was crowded. It was everything was active. People were working, doing a lot of work, but it's all American money coming in, turns out. And by the way, so I'm leaving Sao Paulo to go to the airport, and there's at one point, the freeway is 30 lanes.
Get out of here.
15 and I got photos. 15 and 15 on either side. Stop dead in both directions.
Wow, that's. Not good. What about public transportation? Any trains or anything like that?
They're crazy bus people. They don't have trains. And the buses, they, you know, the bendy bus, the ones that got the little thing in the middle and the bus turns. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They have them with three stages.
Hmm. That seems like a bear to drive.
It's a huge bus. Yeah. Anyway.
We also got stopped out on two positions, our CF Holdings, which actually was interesting because CF Industries was is an agricultural play. Great company, good earnings, and just got – I mean, I think it's down to 150 and change now.
Oh.
And RES, which is a I got to tell you some of these oil companies. I mean, look at – take a look at a stock if you can get a chance. Halliburton.
Yeah.
Oh, my. That is ugly. I mean, ugly with a capital UG.
Huh.
This is an oil services company, and while oil rates have come down a bit, I mean, we're talking about major, major drop. You know, while you're at it, do me a favor. If you're looking at stocks, I think this is really important to look at. You need to look at some individual stocks, how poorly they've done. Like U.S. Steel. X is the symbol.
Yeah.
I think it's down like 50% in the last however long. You know, Goldman Sachs is below where it was in, I think Goldman Sachs low is 80 something back in the day when, you know, everything was collapsing. Maybe it was 65, maybe, but it's like 95 now. And, you know, AK Steel, Ford, Citi, Bank of, I mean, it doesn't feel like it did back then because the market's still a little bit up and some things are doing well, but man, this stuff is just ugly.
You know, it would have sure been nice to buy X back in 2003 when it was like $10 a share and ridden that thing to 160.
Yep.
And then back down. This thing is a roller coaster. It's not a short-term roller coaster, but it's really something.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. The one thing that I actually will put on here, one stock we've been looking at that has been extremely resilient, and surprisingly so, by the way, there's a few of them. Like Chipotle is all-time high it hit the other day. I think Amazon hit an all-time high the other day. Apple did. Priceline.com. Now, Google's gotten in the act recently. They have a new thing called Google Flights. Have you seen this?
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it, but people tell me it's really spectacularly great.
Spectacular. Great. Yeah. Unbelievable. It's simple. Thank goodness.
Yeah,
it doesn't have that
Google's
silly wait
good
time.
That. They're good with that.
Google.com/flights.
Priceline is at $531.
Yeah. And five. Our price was that. There's two things. We have a clear stop at, I think, five.
William Shatner must be a billionaire by now.
Oh, yeah. He's doing well on that, huh? The silly commercials.
Yeah, well, he got a piece of the action early on.
Yep. And so you're seeing a lot of these other pricing sites have problems. Huh. Google's getting the action. Google's only flights right now, they're only domestic and only specials. But it's pretty complete. And it's very easy to use.
I like this Priceline as a short.
Short is exactly right. We are looking to short that. We have a price lower where we want to see a break. Just yesterday we were looking at it, and I believe the top end is 545, I believe it was. Where the top end where it was yesterday was the top end that we see where it possibly will hit resistance, and then after that point you need to get out of it because there's just kind of the sky's the limit after that point, so to speak. But Priceline I'd put down here. It's a little bit early for us in the short. We'd like to see it break down further. But you know what? If they're looking to kind of start taking a hatchet to stocks and we do see a continual downturn from here, that will be hit. So I'm going to add, unless you want to make it purple.
I think we should make it purple because I'm in on that one.
Okay. Let's put that there.
And, you know, we don't have to time it perfectly.
Yep, we'll put that on there. And the question is, I guess, you know, how much traveling will people do when, you know, things really get ugly?
You know, probably not as much as they're doing. I mean, the airlines, all the travel industry has already milked the public for all it can get because, you know, they've got the planes are full of people and it's just terrible. It's not much fun.
Right. So here we're going to put this here. Okay. And we're going to put that this is high priced and competition. Okay. From Google. Okay. All right, so Priceline.com is a short. We'll put that as purple. Let me get that little purple color out on our Google spreadsheet. By the way, all of these, you know this if you've been listening, but all of these are just discussion points. We're not recommending to buy or sell any security. You have to do your own research, and every security obviously carries a significant degree of risk. if you invest in it. So just be, you know,
and the game we play has rigid rules that are not, we don't trade, we can't, I mean, there's ways we can go in and out of something carefully, but generally speaking, we stay in until they get, until we get bounced out.
Yeah, stopped out. So we'll put this in here, and it's purple. I can't get the same color purple. They changed the color.
The other one to the same color.
Yeah, I know.
Just normalize it.
Yes. And then what else here? So, you can see this Google spreadsheet. Just go to DH Unplugged and go over to on the bottom of any post. It says weekly stocks update and all that. And you can see what's happening. There's a Google spreadsheet that automatically updates very nicely. So there you have it. That's purple because it's a combined pick. So there you go. The other thing I'll mention, I just want to mention also, is that this month, all of the private client-only discussions that we have in a private website for our clients, we're actually posting to the Disciplined Investor every day. So everybody can get a flavor for what we're talking about and all that. And next, you know what next month is? Next month is Stocktoberfest.
And what happens in Stocktoberfest?
So we asked our listeners to send in a stock that they want us to review, and every day we'll put up one or two of the stock with our ratings and our analysis so people could see what's going on and how their stock is doing.
So somebody's predicting a huge market crash in October. I can't remember. Or is it your guy? Is that one of your one of those newsletters?
Dent?
It wasn't Dent. It was somebody else.
Stansberry?
We'll talk about it next show.
Okay.
All right. I think that's going to wrap it up for this week.
And that's a wrap.
So hopefully I'll be around next Tuesday, and we can follow up. And I think the market is going to drop back below back into the 10,000.
Test those lows, huh?
Yeah. Why not?
I am having trouble finding this color purple.
After seeing this bear thing here, this bear flag.
Get you a little nervous, huh?
Well, no, I'm not in.
Oh.
Doesn't make me nervous at all. It sounds like fun.
At least it's topics for us to discuss.
Okay. All right. We'll talk to you then.
Okay. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.